Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, May 21st, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 20 to the hour. We've got a really good show for you today, and it's going to include how high fructose corn syrup makes you stupid.
And HDL cholesterol may not reduce the risk of arteriosclerosis or heart attacks.
Scientists have uncovered a new treatment for diabetic peripheral neuropathy that's kind of interesting since we already have the cure, which we'll tell you about.
And when you eat affects your weight.
And how about familial precancerous polyps? Do they predict colon cancer, and do you need to do a colonoscopy for that?
And alternative medicine can help kick the smoking habit, and much more.
So if you want to join in our conversation, you have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
Have you been noticing all these television ads lately saying that the body doesn't know the difference between high fructose corn syrup and sugar? Well, that's a lot of rubbish. I mean, how does binging on soda and sweets for a mere 6 weeks make you stupid? Tell us about how high fructose corn syrup can actually slow the brain.
Well, it actually does, and it does by causing something called insulin resistance, which means that the insulin doesn't really get into the brain very well in that setting. And when it doesn't, it causes actually a type 3 diabetes, which means that the brain develops a kind of inability to process the sugars that are there. And that tends to cause all kinds of problems that lead to type 2 diabetes, type 3 diabetes, obesity, fatty liver.
And the companies seem to do a pretty good job of slipping high fructose corn syrup into everything, even like spaghetti sauce and lots of foods. When you go to Chinese restaurants, in fact, I've gotten so one of the ones that we go to, I ask them not to put sugar in it.
Yeah, really, that's right.
But high fructose corn syrup is easy to use because it's a liquid and so forth. But why would it be okay to eat a whole fruit? Because fruit has fructose in it.
Well, it's a different thing. You're right, and it's a great point, and it really tells you about the brilliance of Mother Nature. What she's done is she's put the poison, relatively, if you want to call fructose that, which is a little aggressive. But if you consider that the bad stuff, then you look at what's the rest of what's in the fruit, and why does it come packaged with fructose? And the whole thing there is that you have the cure as well as the cause. The high fructose corn syrup, or the fructose being the cause, and the fiber and the antioxidants and all the other things in fruit, protecting against just taking the fructose by itself. And there's a difference between fructose, high fructose corn syrup, and sugar, even though they're made out of the same two sugars, because sugar is made out of fructose and glucose, and high fructose corn syrup is made out of the same thing. And so the industry that makes high fructose corn syrup is saying, see, there's no difference between them. But there is. The difference is this. And that's that even though they're both about 50% fructose and about 50% glucose, and it varies substantially a little bit, the difference is that the high fructose corn syrup are simple sugars, meaning that both the glucose and the fructose are free. They're not connected together. But in sugar, they are connected, and they form what's called a disaccharide, which means that the fructose and the glucose are connected to one another in a chemical bond, but they're separate in high fructose corn syrup, and that does seem to make a difference.
Well, you know, I was reading that high fructose corn syrup can increase your triglycerides, mm-hmm. and when that's the fat that's in your blood.
Right.
And then doesn't that lead to less leptin to the brain, which would increase your appetite?
Okay, that's right. And what Vicki's saying is that leptin, which is a hormone that's made by fat, okay, is very important in regulating our appetite so that when we eat, our fat cells release this hormone called leptin, and it tells our brain, if it can get there, that you're full. You don't need to eat. But when triglyceride levels are high, that leptin can't get across that blood-brain barrier. It can't get into the brain. And so you develop something called leptin resistance. There's just not enough leptin to turn the brain off.
So is there something that could help out with this high fructose corn syrup that would protect the brain from it?
Well, one is we don't want to eat it because we know that that's an issue. And so if we don't use high fructose corn syrup, that's the first step. And if we use a limited amount of sugar, our brain can respond to glucose much better than it can to fructose.
So what about some of the omega-3 fatty acids?
Well, they protect the brain, okay, from the effects of high insulin levels. And so the reason that a study was done, okay, at UCLA, looking at the effect of binging on soda and sweets, what they did is they took two groups of rats and they went ahead and they put one on a diet that had a lot of fructose, which turns out to slow the brain and hampers memory and learning. And they put the other on a diet that had both the high fructose corn syrup and omega-3 fatty acids. And over 6 weeks, they measured the difference in how these rats could go through a maze, and because they had trained them already to go through it. And so when they went ahead and measured at the end of 6 weeks how the rats who were just on the high fructose corn syrup did on the maze, they didn't do very well. Their memory wasn't good. They didn't learn well. And the rats that had the essential fatty acid DHA also in it, it seemed to protect them. So it's a good question. And I think what it does is it protects against the effects of high insulin in the brain, which, of course, causes what we talked about being type 3 diabetes.
So I think it'd be good to go over a little bit what some of the omega-3s are, like the fish oil and flaxseed oil and the DHA, the nuts, and those kind of things protect the brain cells.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, when we're looking at essential fatty acids, first of all, these are fats that are essential for life, meaning you can't live without them. And if you're short on them, you'll have all kinds of problems that will make you not very smart and also cause all kinds of other problems. So the essential fatty acids, there are two basic families. One is the omega-3, which comes from alpha-linolenic acid, and the other is omega-6, and that comes from linoleic acid. Now, DHA and EPA are omega-3 fats, and those omega-3 fats are the ones that do all the wonderful things that come in fish or krill oil. But in when you take in the alpha-linolenic acid in the form of flaxseed oil, it doesn't have EPA and DHA in it. And so the body has to be able to convert that. But not everybody can do that, particularly people who are sick. So the trick in those people is to use fish oil to be able to get high levels of EPA and DHA. And the oil, the fish oil that has the highest concentration of DHA, which is what we're concerned about here the most, is tuna oil. So that's an interesting little side.
So a person is going to be taking finals. It's not a good idea to cram by and stay awake by drinking these sodas that they may have some caffeine in, and you think that those are keeping you awake and so forth, but they're just loaded with high fructose corn syrup, and they're going to slow your brain down.
That's exactly right.
So maybe the night before to have a fish dinner, and then you're going to get these omega-3s, and maybe eat some nuts in between your finals to feed your brain.
Well, see, the problem is when you're young, you feel like you're indestructible. And generally, young people are fairly more fit. They're doing more exercise than people who are not, and they burn the high fructose corn syrup a lot faster. But when you get sedentary because you're studying and you're drinking your high fructose corn syrup and taking a lot of sweets that have that in it, in just about 6 weeks, it'll make you stupid just like it made the rat stupid. So that's
another thing that's just an aside here for people to be aware of is that the government gives corn subsidies to the businesses. And most of the corn, if it's not organic, it's genetically engineered. So that's what you're getting in high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, that's really right. So there are lots of reasons for not wanting to do that and just staying away from that. The only people that get away with having high fructose corn syrup are probably athletes or people who will not have a soft drink at a time that's not right, meaning they'll have it when they're not going to be exercising, because that's when you get into trouble. The body knows what to do depending on the particular time that you consume something. So if you're eating or drinking a lot of sodas and then you're not exercising, that that fructose that's in there, that high fructose corn syrup, is going to be converted to fat and about 40% faster.
That are not healthy besides just the sugar, too, so.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, it's just not a good idea.
But even fruit juice is really high in fructose.
Exactly.
Better, like you said earlier, to eat the whole fruit.
Well, yeah, and the fruit juice, see, the fiber that's in there, that's left in there, which isn't a lot, is destroyed. So you wind up consuming something that in theory might be okay. Like, for example, if you made orange juice, okay, and you had the pulp in there, that would be fine, but you don't need four oranges. Okay, it's an awful lot of stuff that's in there.
Well, you know, so many people are giving their kids fruit juice all the time. It's better than the soft drink, but, you know, to be giving your kids fruit juice all the time, that's feeding them a lot of fructose.
You're right. Well, this is a fantastic subject to go over, so I guess the idea that sugar makes you stupid is something we need to pay attention to. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we have a call from Deanna from Colorado. Hi, Deanna.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm so good. I just love your program. I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you.
I just had a hip replacement 3 weeks ago tomorrow.
Wow.
Now, my question is, I'm getting around pretty well because I swim for exercise, you know, to get strong before it. But the leg lengths are different on the two legs.
Oh, dear. So they goofed it up, huh?
No, I don't think they goofed it up. They got to put that device in there, and they got to push it down into the bone. So what I'm wondering is, how do you get over that different length of the legs?
Well, see, that shouldn't happen, but it does sometimes, and it's tricky. I will agree that sometimes that's a problem. I've seen people have a difference of as much as 2 inches, which is a disaster. In fact, the particular person I know that had that had to go back and have it redone. And what he tried to do after he had this problem that you do is to put a lift in the other shoe, okay? Okay, to try and even them out. And that's about all you can do in that setting. It's disappointing. How much difference is there in your leg length?
1 inch.
Oh, see, that's a lot, and that I'd say that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, that could throw your back out, too.
That can do a lot of things.
That's what's happening. I'm having knee pain and back pain, and you know what might end up happening is I might have to have the other hip replaced just because the wear and tear on both of the hip joints has been going on for 10 years.
Yeah. How old are you, Deanna?
64.
Okay, so you're getting one at about an average age, and you didn't have a good result from your surgery. I'm sorry to tell you that, but you didn't. And you need to do as much physical therapy as you can. I'd see a good chiropractor to try and get some alignment there, because the alignment here is really important.
And see about getting the lift in your shoe.
Right,
yes,
all those things.
Yes, I will do that.
And,
okay.
And do you do hard physical exercise, or are you primarily a swimmer?
Primarily a swimmer, because my hip has been off for so long that it hurts to walk.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I went through that as well, and I know how that can go. And I'll tell you now that I've had a second replacement on the same side, it's been about 8 months since it was done, and I'm out playing singles and tennis now. So there's great hope. And you had a standard hip replacement? It wasn't a hip resurfacing?
No, it was total hip replacement.
Total hip. Okay, well, that's fine. And you should do well with that. But, I mean, unfortunately, you've got an inch difference there. You need a good chiropractor, and you need some good physical therapy. So thanks for calling. I hope it works out for you, Deanna. Thanks for listening. Sure.
For me, before I had the surgery, I lost 25 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And what I saw it do also was reset the brain chemistry to tell me when I was hungry or not.
Interesting.
So I just wanted to give you that comment on top of what you just said earlier.
Thanks for the comment. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
We'll be right back.
seem like big business is compromising the organic food industry, and it's kind of upsetting. You know, I was afraid that this might happen because people are demanding to have healthier food, and they're wanting to have organic food. So the big business is looking to make big money, and it seems that there's an increasing number of questionable additives that are being approved for use in organic foods. I mean, there's currently almost 300 non-organic and synthetic compounds that are approved for use in organic farming or food production.
Wow, that's shocking.
Isn't it? I mean, people that are doing the scientific reviews and approving these chemicals are reminding me of what we talk about so often with the pharmaceutical companies, because they're mostly affiliated with the same corporate agribusiness and the lobbying for the use of these additives to the organic food because they're looking for profit. And I guess it really shouldn't be such a surprise, but it's just so disappointing with this conflict of interest spreading to organics. And I just wanted to give an example here. There were two $12 billion corporations that received approvals for synthetic genetically mutated DHA and ARA oils derived from algae and soil fungus. And they're grown in genetically engineered corn products.
Oh,
and the oil that's extracted, they use synthetic solvents, including things like hexane, which is a neurotoxic byproduct of gasoline refinement that's specifically banned in organics. And there are other, you know, questionable manufacturing practices and misleading statements. So this is all just kind of like the tip of the iceberg, but they're starting to use things like nanotechnology and, you know, just heavily processed ingredients. And so the Cornucopia Institute, which is a nonprofit organic watchdog, they were looking at carrageen, or however you pronounce that, carrageenan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been noticing that that's in a lot of different products that you can buy in the health food store in organic foods. And it comes from seaweed, and so people think that it's natural, but it's an inflammatory agent, and it's tied to serious intestinal diseases, and it's categorized as a possible carcinogen, and now it's approved in organic foods. I mean, some of this is just so upsetting to me personally, and I'm assuming it is to you too, because these are violations of some of the congressional intent with this conflict of interest on the National Organic Standards Board, with big business representatives on the board posing as farmers and scientists. So there's a lot of bias that's going on here. But some of the things that they do too is that they bleach and they deodorize some of these synthetic things and call them natural, and oh, it just goes on and on. So anyway, it's like there's foxes guarding the organic chicken coop.
You got that right.
And they're just neck deep in corporate interests. If you want to do something about this, I think that the way to do it is to probably shop when you can at the farmers markets, because those are not big business. Those are small farmers for the most part. And another thing is you could write and go to the Cornucopia Institute's website. They have a proxy letter there, actually, and you can just copy it off and sign it and mail it to the powers in Washington, because we really want to preserve and not destroy our organic foods, you know?
Well, this country has really become a corporate democracy, and unfortunately it's about money and private interests and conflicts of interest and who you know and political favors and economic favors, and it's just a disaster that we, the people, don't any longer have control. We're going to have to step up to the plate and do something.
You know, at first when I saw, you know, some organics being carried in some of the major grocery stores, I thought, oh, isn't this great? And I was noticing that some of the names on the products were like the regular ones from conventional companies. So you see, what's happened is that they see that people want organic and healthy foods, and so they're stepping up to the plate, but in the process they're altering them and they're not so healthy anymore.
Well, you're right. And even the stores, you know, that sell organic food, they put these labels on them.
Oh yeah, you can't trust the labels.
Well, it's not just the labels, it's the glue on the label that goes onto the product. It goes into the fruit,
yeah,
or
so,
into the vegetable.
So cut it off, huh?
You have to cut it off. Yeah, they should be doing something that doesn't have anything toxic
in it. And when
it.
Something says natural, it means absolutely nothing.
Right.
Don't get swayed by the term natural because there's no regulation on that.
Well, that's a great tip.
And read ingredients. Don't trust labels.
Exactly. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, cholesterol seems to be getting more complicated. If you're on statins to lower your HDL, your high-density cholesterol.
To raise them, to raise your HDL.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
You may want to reconsider because the high-density cholesterol, the HDL, the good cholesterol that's supposed to be high, has now been found to not reduce the risk for arteriosclerosis or heart attacks if it's raised artificially in someone with congenitally low or naturally low HDL.
Yeah.
So it looks like we can't outfox nature.
Well, that's really right, Vicki. And when you look at HDL in the studies like the Framingham study that was done in the 60s and 70s, and we have so much rich data from, it shows that HDL level makes a big difference in how people do. In fact, we've always said it's the boss and the LDL's not the boss. So that if you happen to have a high HDL and a low LDL, your chances of having a heart attack are slim, or a stroke, or some other cardiovascular effect. But when your HDL is low, and then you try to raise it, as we do with so many drugs, it doesn't do any good, is what this data is showing. So we have data from people who have genetically high levels of HDL. You can change that. And when you raise those levels of HDL, you would think that it would do the same thing as these people who had HDLs that were high to start with in the Framingham study. But not
so
true.
So in other words, the HDL is more of a marker?
That's what it seems to be. It's more of a marker. It's like a PSA is to prostate cancer. So when the PSA level is high, which is a marker of prostate cancer, it tells you you have it, and it's a bad sign. You sure wouldn't want it, but it doesn't do any good to go in there and get rid of all the PSA because it's only telling you, hey, there's a cancer in here. So by changing the marker, doesn't change the outcome, particularly when you're looking at just raising HDL. Now, with LDL, it's another story. LDL seems to be a primary thing. And when your LDL levels are high, that is predictive, and lowering the LDL does make a difference. Now, you can do that with drugs. You can do that with lifestyle. And, of course, the best thing to do for anything is almost always
exercise.
Yeah, it's lifestyle. So you eat right, you reduce your stress, you exercise. And what better way to raise your HDL naturally than to do it through exercise?
So what's a good ratio to have between the LDL and the HDL?
Well, the ratios that we look at most of the time are total cholesterol to HDL. And so if you had a total cholesterol of 200, you would like to have at least a level of 50 of your HDL. That would be a 4-to-1 ratio. And anything lower than that would be better. So say you had an HDL of 100 and a total cholesterol of 200. That would be 2-to-1. That would be terrific. But if it was the other way around, it was 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or even 10-to-1, you've got a problem.
So 4-to-1 is still okay.
4-to-1 is okay. Anything lower than that, you can brag about because it's a good thing, as long as that was done naturally.
Well, aren't some of the pharmaceutical companies trying to come up with drugs now to raise the HDL? What happened with Roche and some of these that have been trying to?
That's a really good question, and we're going to come back to that after our short station break here. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And when we come back, more about your calls and more about HDL cholesterol. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number, if you have a question about what we're talking about or about your health, is 888-874-4888.
Yes, and what we've been talking about is how HDL, the good cholesterol that's supposed to be high, has now been found to not reduce the risk for arteriosclerosis or heart attacks if it's raised artificially in somebody that has congenitally low or naturally low HDL. So where we left off was we were talking about some of the pharmaceutical companies now that are trying to come up with medications to raise the HDL, and what's going on?
Yeah, these are called cholesterol ester transfer protein inhibitors.
Oh, like everybody's going to remember that one.
Nobody can remember that.
They're CETP.
Called, yeah, you can remember that. And when the two studies that have been done on this, one showed that raising the HDL, which it did tremendously, was associated with a higher mortality rate. What do you think of that? And the other one that's still that was stopped just recently shows that there was no benefit to using that type of approach. So there was no improvement by raising HDL.
So we were talking about lifestyle is a good way to do it because that was natural. What about supplements like niacin? A lot of people tried to take niacin to raise their HDL.
Yeah, well, niacin does do that, but it doesn't look like niacin is any more likely to work than the approaches that use these CETP inhibitors.
Except for niacin probably doesn't have those bad side effects.
Well, it might. You don't know. And it's worrisome now that we have, you know, this study came out showing this. And by the way, it's not the only study that's looked at this. There are two others that were done before this. So this is something where now there's a building database that suggests that raising HDL using any approach may not be helpful. Now, I'd have to take exception with the people who, from Harvard, who came up with this study, saying that that you can't do anything naturally. You may not be able to do anything naturally, raise cholesterol that would be beneficial. But you go back to those people in the Framingham study that had their cholesterols measured, and those people that had high HDLs as a baseline were the ones that did so much better. So I think that these are people who are probably fitter, who are probably had a lifestyle that was healthier and did better. So I'm going to go on record saying that I think that exercise is a brilliant way of trying to raise HDL, lower LDL, lower total cholesterol, and put you at a much lower risk for heart attacks, strokes, and other arteriosclerotic problems.
Isn't one of the main reasons why we have problems with cholesterol that it has to do with inflammation?
Absolutely. And we know that inflammation does a lot to change around the ratios. When you're sick with a lot of inflammation, your cholesterol, total cholesterol is going to drop substantially. Your LDL is going to raise dramatically, and your HDL is going to drop dramatically as well.
So this would be another reason to emphasize a healthy lifestyle, because if you have a healthy lifestyle, your likelihood of having inflammation is going to go down, and that's getting at the cause of what's messing up the cholesterol.
Yeah, so you've got it worked out, but I don't think most doctors do. And that's why they're into trying to come up with drugs to try and do what they aren't really trained well enough to teach to their patients. And then there are some people who come up with these outrageous things like Vytorin, you know, was in the news a couple of years ago, is a combination of Zetia, which blocks the absorption of cholesterol from the gut, and Zocor, which is a statin. And what they found in the studies that looked at that is, yes, all the numbers look better, but no, the patients didn't do any better. And there may have been a slight decrease in heart attacks and strokes, but there was an increase in all-cause mortality. So that approach was no good. Then they came out with a combination of Lipitor and niacin, or Zocor and niacin. And what they found there is that the risk for muscle inflammation and what's called rhabdomyolysis, which means that the muscle pigment raises tremendously in the serum, and it plugs up the kidneys, and that causes, in a lot of people, renal failure or even death. So it's interesting that these ideas come up because they make philosophical sense, but when you do the studies, it's kind of frightening. In fact, when you use a drug like Vytorin, it increases the thickness of the artery walls, which is something that you really don't want.
I'll say. I mean, just speed up clogging them up.
Speed up. So when we're looking at this whole topic of HDL and how to manipulate it, you can do all these artificial things, and of course, Big Pharma's quick to do it because what happens is they make drugs that are the number one sellers. I mean, what's the number one seller in all the world of all the drugs that are there? It's Lipitor. And Crestor is another one that's in the top five. So you're looking at statins as being massively overused, and of course, there are lots of side effects from taking statin drugs. You're looking at liver problems and this kidney failure we're talking about and peripheral neuropathies and muscle pains. and then all these other things that are happening that that are not good for our metabolism. So the statins are something to consider for people who have had a heart attack or a stroke, who are not going to be able to do or won't do anything about lifestyle. You may be pressed into using them in that setting, and I will with some people like that. But in general, for primary prevention, is absolutely not indicated, and there have been many studies done on that in the past couple of years that show that. And your obligation as a healer is to try and help your patient to understand more about what they can do themselves that are lifestyle-oriented, particularly exercise, diet, weight control, stress reduction, adequate sleep, and avoiding the toxins in the environment that cause, because all these things cause inflammation.
So get off the couch and go jog down to the health food store.
That's right. That's right. So that's where we are with that. So the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
I have a letter here from Bob, who's a retired husband.
That's an interesting way to say it. He's retired from being a husband, or is retired and he's a husband?
Well, you're going to find out.
Oh, okay.
He says it's important for men to remember that as women grow older, it becomes harder for them to maintain the same quality of housekeeping as when they were younger.
Oh, is that right?
And when you notice this, he says, try not to yell at them, because some are oversensitive, and there's nothing worse than an oversensitive woman.
Oh, my God. This guy's going to get a lot of flack. Do you have his address or phone number?
Well, here it goes. My name is Bob. Let me relate how I handled the situation with my wife. Well, when I retired a few years ago, it became necessary for Debbie to get a full-time job along with her part-time job, both for extra income.
Oh, man, this guy's a stud.
And for the health benefits that we needed. Shortly after she started working, I noticed that she was beginning to show her age. Well, I usually get home from the golf club about the same time she gets home from work. Although she knows how hungry I am, she almost always says she has to rest for half an hour or so before she starts dinner. Well, I don't yell at her.
What a genius.
Instead, I tell her to take her time and just wake me when she gets dinner on the table.
Oh,
I generally have lunch in the men's grill at the club, so eating out is not reasonable. I'm ready for some home-cooked grub when I hit that door. Well, she used to do the dishes as soon as we finished eating. But now it's not unusual for them to sit on the table for several hours after dinner. Well, I do what I can by diplomatically reminding her several times each evening that they won't clean themselves. I know she really appreciates this.
Yeah.
And it does seem to motivate her to get them done before she goes to bed. Well, another symptom of aging is complaining, I think. For example, she will say that it's difficult for her to find time to pay the monthly bills during her lunch hour. But boys, we take them for better or worse. So I just smile and offer encouragement. I tell her to stretch it out over 2 or even 3 days. Well, that way she won't have to rush so much. I also remind her that missing lunch completely now and then wouldn't hurt her any.
Boy, this guy's a star.
If you know what I mean, I like to think tact is one of my strong points. When doing simple jobs, she seems to think she needs more rest periods. She had to take a break when she was only half finished mowing the yard. Well, I try not to make a scene. I'm a fair man. I tell her to fix herself a nice, big, cold glass of freshly squeezed lemonade, and I just sit for a while. And as long as she's making one for herself, she might as well make one for me, too.
Yeah, of course.
That reminds me of that scene with Whoopi Goldberg, you know, when she's spitting the glass of lemonade.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, well, right. It would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
In Color Purple?
Yeah.
Well, I know that I probably look like a saint in the way I support my wife. I'm not saying that showing this much consideration is easy. Now, many men will find it difficult, and some will find it impossible. Nobody knows better than I do how frustrating women get as they get older. Now, guys, even if you just use a little more tact and less criticism of your aging wife because of this article, I will consider that writing it was well worthwhile. After all, we're all put on this earth to help each other. Uh-oh, we just received a message that Bob suddenly died on May the 20th.
What a surprise. Might have been natural, huh?
Of a perforated rectum.
Oh, my God.
The police report says he was found with a Callaway 50-inch Big Bertha driver's tube golf club jammed up his rear end. His wife was arrested and charged with murder. Well, the all-woman jury took only 10 minutes to find her not guilty, except in her defense that Bob somehow, without looking, accidentally sat down on his golf club. Well, you know, laughter is the best medicine.
I'll say that's hilarious. Well, poor Bob.
So you better behave yourself.
Yes, ma'am. All right.
Okay.
The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Diabetic neuropathy, it's not a new topic to our show or to our website, but our solution with the photon stimulator, which is a near-infrared light, is ignored by most of the medical profession. So tell us about this new research that reveals a multinational collaboration between scientists from, you know, the United Kingdom, Germany, New York,
yeah,
Australia,
sure.
Eastern Europe, and so forth.
All right.
What's going on?
Well, this was published in a journal called Nature Medicine, and what they're looking at is the epidemic of diabetes and the fact that after about 10 years, about 50% of people have clinical evidence of diabetic neuropathy, and about 25% of those people will have pain with their neuropathy and not just numbness. And so this team has been looking at a compound called methylglyoxal, which is something that appears to modify a protein in nerve endings that causes pain to become a real problem. So they're looking for ways to try and block this chemical so that people won't have pain. And I'm going, 30 years on this, well, you know, that's commendable. And yes, it's nice to know more about things that might be helpful. But we've already got the bloody cure. I mean, it's already done.
It's not really bloody.
No, it's not. But, you know, when I get excited, I like to use strong language, and that's the strongest safe language I could think of. Because infrared light therapy, in my experience, is just absolutely dramatic. When you use this infrared light at about 860 nanometers, it will turn around most diabetes, most diabetic neuropathies that have pain in two or three treatments of 15 minutes.
And it also works on the numbness.
It works on the numbness. It prevents some of the sores from developing. And if they're there, it helps heal them. It helps prevent some of the amputations. Now, none of this, of course, is approved by the FDA. Because the FDA is not our friend. They're the friend of Big Pharma, and the conflict of interest there is a disaster.
Because of all the money.
Yeah, of course. And so you're not going to see this being approved as an FDA device, which means that reimbursement for treatment with this is not going to be possible. So what I do in this setting is I charge $25, okay, for each treatment plus my time. To be able to get people who have this condition fixed. And it doesn't just work for diabetics with neuropathy. It works with a lot of other neuropathies. In fact, we're doing a clinical trial now at the University of California in San Francisco that's NIH approved for $6 million that started up to treat the neuropathy caused by chemotherapy, because we know that that works too. And we have a marvelous technology that has been created by Maurice Bales, formerly of Bales Scientific, that is unbelievable in terms of how different it is from the mainstream kinds of infrared light devices that are on the market today. So that's kind of like where we are with that. So I think that that should be something that doctors should be looking into, and as we get more evidence about it, that's what we should be looking to use as a mainstream approach.
Well, these neuropathies are really serious because they affect people's quality of life, you know? When you think about it, if especially the ones that have pain because they can't sleep,
affects their mood, their mobility,
their work, their relationships, their self-esteem, their independence.
That's absolutely right. I mean, this is a miraculous thing that a few doctors know about because they've tried it. And I think we're at the peak of our game now in using this technology. So you people out there who have a problem with diabetic neuropathy, whether it's painful or just numb, or you have sores in your feet, or there are problems that may result in amputations, should go to the website, drsaputo.com. That's S-A-P-U-T-O.com, and doctor is spelled out. And put in infrared light therapy in the search box, and about 50 different audios and videos that Vicki and I have made, and we have made with Maurice Bales as well, are available to educate you about how this light works and what it's good for. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Joe from Princeton, New Jersey. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. What's up?
I just had a question. You know, I was on Lipitor and I had to stop because I had some side effects, and I'm not really interested in that kind of medication. But so I understand exercise.
What was the medication? When you get it?
Lipitor.
Oh, Lipitor. Okay, good.
Yeah. And I just wanted to know, you know, you mentioned exercise. What other life changes, lifestyle changes can you make?
Okay, well, see, everybody wants kind of like the easy way out. And the problem, really, Joe, is that there's inflammation going on in the body, and there are lots of ways to get inflammation. Basically, the lifestyle approaches that matter are diet, exercise, stress, sleep, weight, exposure to environmental toxins. If you can avoid those things or do them properly, your chances for having a cholesterol problem go way down. And that's the best way to do it. See, cholesterol has gotten a very bad rap. Cholesterol is our friend. It's a very good molecule. Fact is, if you didn't have any cholesterol, you'd be dead. That's how essential it is. And what we need it for is our cell membranes, for neurotransmitters in the brain, to make vitamin D, to make hormones. It does a lot of things. We need it to be able to digest our food. It does a lot of things that are absolutely vital. It's the inflammation, okay, that's in our environment, or from all these lifestyle things that I just mentioned, that are the culprit. So when we're talking about taking a drug like Lipitor or a supplement like niacin or et cetera, yes, they can be done, but in my opinion, not for primary prevention, which means not for somebody who's never had a complication of either a heart attack or a stroke or some other manifestation of arteriosclerosis.
Joe, do you know what your ratio is for your HDL and LDL?
I just know that it wasn't very good. I can't remember what it was. But,
okay, well, you need to know that. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, you have to take responsibility. Okay?
Right.
And that's where the problem comes, because we get hoodwinked into thinking that these direct-to-consumer ads that we have are going to tell the truth about things like Vitorin and Lipitor and et cetera, et cetera. And they don't, because their goal is to do what? Sell drug.
Right.
So you've got a job in front of you.
Yes, right.
And the problem is you're having difficulty getting started. So I'm just going to hope that you will take some of this seriously and maybe go to the website, at drsaputo.com and put statins in there or put cholesterol in there, and you'll see lots of audios and videos that are all short, right to the point, and will give you the boost that you may need with information. We also have health assessments on the site. And by the way, the site's free. There is no charge for any information on the site, and it's free to join. But if you take the health assessment on cholesterol, you'll get lots of information that's just like on the phone here or like in video.
Okay, great.
So thanks for calling. I hope that helped you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Alan from Queens. Hi, Alan.
Hi, doctor. About 4.5 years ago, I had a hematoma on my left foot.
A hematoma?
Yes.
A blood clot.
Right.
Okay.
It came from an object falling on my foot.
Okay.
I was sent to the hospital to take 9 days of intravenous antibiotics.
Okay. Oh,
make a long story short, my foot never really healed 100%.
Uh-huh.
There's, like, my ankle is black and blue.
Uh-huh.
The wound, there's still scarring. And I was told that Arnica might help. I tried it. It didn't do much.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if this light therapy would be something that could be used to help heal my foot.
I would sure try it. I mean, there's not much downside to it. You may find that there are some chiropractors who have that. They're more apt to have them than doctors. And you could just try that without having all the fancy equipment that we have. We use infrared scanners, and we have different kinds of devices, and they're at different frequencies. But yes, I think it would be a terrific way to go about that. Another thing that could be helpful would be something like DMSO. If you want to try that, but you need to do that under the supervision of your doctor. And of course, I can't give anybody advice on this show because I'm not your doctor. So I'm giving you ideas to contemplate. So yeah,
DSMO,
that would be a good...
something that could be bought in a health food store.
Yeah, some health food stores will carry DMSO. If not, go online and put DMSO there, and you'll find places where you can purchase it.
The main thing is you just have to put it on clean skin.
Yeah, and you're right. That's
because
right.
It carries whatever's on your skin into your bloodstream. So.
Exactly.
Would alcohol be a good way to clean it before the use?
No, just with soap and water. Just rinse
soap
it off.
Yeah, a little alcohol would be all right, too, as long as you let it dry. Wouldn't be an
right.
issue. All right, so I hope that helps you, Alan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, have a great day. All right, we're just near the end of the show here, Vicki. We probably just catch up with one more little... caveat.
Well, it was kind of fun to read about when we eat matters, because we already know that what we eat matters, especially for calories for putting on weight. And now this new study shows when we eat matters because of how we process what we eat at different times of the day. So if you could just quickly explain how when we eat makes a difference.
Yeah, well, you would think it didn't make any difference, but there was an article published in Cell Metabolism, a journal called Cell Metabolism, where they put mice on a high-fat diet, and they fed it either over 8 hours or over 24 hours, but they had the same number of calories. And what they found was is that the mice that were treated over or allowed to eat ad lib, meaning over the 24-hour period, the same number of calories, had a different weight than the ones that were eating it just over the 8 hours that we normally would eat. So the bottom line here is that there's a mismatch of the body clock, okay, of the hormone systems that we have that involve things like adrenal hormones, thyroid hormones, insulin, pituitary hormones. And depending on what's available in the body at certain times depends on how the body will process what you eat. So it matters when you eat, and when there's this mismatch, what happens is you get overweight, you get a fatty liver, and there's an increase in inflammatory markers. So snacking is not such a good idea. Eating in the middle of the night, not such a good idea.
Because your body's working less efficiently.
Well, that's exactly right. So it's interesting that what you eat matters. We know that the calories matter, but when you eat is important, too. So we're at the end of our show here, and I want to thank you for joining us and remind you that our website, drsaputo.com, is a free website. It is completely free, and joining is free, and there are 33 health assessments on it that are for various different topics like hypertension, diabetes, cancer, how to prevent cancer, certain kinds of diets, etc. And all the information is in audio and video. We have over 2,000 that I think will be very interesting for you to take a look at. So I want to thank you for joining us today and remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the new health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for health will also be archived on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like more information on the topics we discussed, just go to DrSaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos located on DrSaputo.com under Radio. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week. We'll see you next week.